21 past two. This is week two of a new segment we've got on the program here on Saturday Sports Central called Top of the Class. And joining me on the line once again, the program manager and senior educator of the sports programs at Community Training Initiatives is Phil Shelley. G'day, Phil.
Good afternoon, Dev. How are you?
Going well. I'm much better than you are because I know you're moving house and I reckon that's the most stressful thing anyone can do in their life just about.
I would much rather be sitting in there next to you, my friend.
Yes, but you're not. And Phil Brooker is from Bellajack Consulting and Victorian Government Department of Economic Development. G'day, Phil.
G'day, Kevin. How are you?
Just get you to sit right in on that one. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Now, we're going to talk about management and governance of sporting clubs and associations, and that's one area where I think both of you will agree has taken an enormous leap in the last sort of 5 years or so.
Absolutely, Kevin. We're seeing pretty much across the board that sport and the business of sport are becoming more and more to the fore. What we're seeing is lots of what used to be amateur sports run by a lot of well-meaning volunteers, and often cases mums and dads, are now finding that they are effectively running, you know, in some cases, multi-million dollar businesses. Mm. And these multi-million dollar businesses really, from a governance perspective, can't survive under the traditional committee with a bunch of well-meaning volunteers. They actually need people working for them who understand the business of sport.
So is it the fact that clubs and organisations haven't been able to keep up with the way the sports are growing professionally in terms of, you know, we look at local footy clubs now who are paying $300,000, $400,000, and $500,000 a year to players.
Well, the local footy club side of things is a very interesting one. Kevin, you and I were speaking off air before about a client of ours who's a club within the VFL, and talking to their CEO and their head of football a couple of months ago, and they were lamenting the fact that they're subject to a salary cap. Mm. Their salary cap is about $200,000 less than a number of the suburban clubs that they're up against.
Yep.
Now, when you've got local football teams that are paying their players up to, as you say, $400,000-$500,000, plus you've got all of the other revenue that comes through the bar, through their membership, they are major businesses. There are lots of small to medium-sized businesses that would love to have the sort of revenue that flows through a local footy club, local basketball associations, who we do a lot of work with as well. They are serious businesses.
Yep. Phil, I guess that's where CTI comes in because, say me, for instance, I've been at a club for a number of years and I've been helping out and I've got on the committee and all of a sudden I'm looking at the budgets and thinking there's a $500,000 business that's been, or $1 million business that's been run here. I'm not equipped to do that, which is where, I guess, Phil, from CTI's point of view, that's where you come in?
Yeah, I think our approach to this is twofold. One is that, you know, we want to put back into sport, and we see that, you know, CTI's philosophy is to provide training in areas where there's a real need and a real demand for those skills. For employment and also, you know, in the industries. But we're identifying that is a common thing, and Phil's sort of verified that through his hands-on involvement with this, but so many kitchen table managed clubs and associations. I think a lot of them are on the right track now where they're smart about saying, well, we need a specific set of skills, and if there's an accountant who's got some kids playing at the club, you know, let's offer them free membership and get that accountant involved, or, you know, let's get, you know, people with business skills involved. So I think it is, you know, heading in that direction, but after discussions with Phil, there needs to be a lot more than that. You know, there needs to be people overseeing them, and some of those people, as a goodwill thing, do their little two bobs worth, but I'm sure Phil will expand more on this, but, you know, it needs to be more of a hands-on, full-time thing now. So that's the one side of things, is trying to assist with the management of clubs, but it's also trying to provide career opportunities for those people who may be in those roles and enjoying what they do and see that they could do it for a living.
And I guess the one thing that happens there is that as clubs get more professional, they're going to have to actually look at putting on people. I know a few clubs that I've been involved with have tried that, but haven't been able to sustain that role of someone who looks after the sponsorship and the, you know, the management of the club.
Yeah. Phil could probably expand more on that, but my two bobs worth on that one would be that, again, if you, especially in a sponsorship type role, you know, often clubs won't want to pay a commission to people, but if that person's good, they're going to be bringing in a lot of money that you wouldn't have anyway. And you know, so a person who has the skill set and the management skills, you know, can generate their own income plus a hell of a lot more for the club if they're, you know, trained professionally to do what they do.
I would say sponsorship and the sales thereof is actually a really exciting. It's probably outside of this particular discussion, but it's a fascinating area because traditionally sports clubs have sold their sponsorship more as a donation. I mean, they go to well-meaning people, and frankly, you've seen it at AFL level, less so now, but years back when clubs were struggling, the people who had lots of money in the club would just really just dip into their pockets, and they'd call it sponsorship, and that flowed through to other types of sports and other associations. But what we're now seeing is that these clubs and associations actually have a couple of really valuable assets. If you're a typical sports association with take a basketball or netball association, yep, which is probably the most common large-scale sporting association throughout Melbourne, you have somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 just kids, and then on top of that you'll have another 5,000 or so adult performers and players. When you've got a database that then extends out beyond those 10,000-15,000 to their families and to their friends, and the potential to actually turn that into an asset of real value is enormous, yep, absolutely enormous, but almost never exploited. You still see, and Phil and I were having a chat about this the other day, you still see the first thing that gets offered to a potential sponsor is a sign on the wall.
Yep.
Now, frankly, who reads the sign on the wall? Whereas if you said to a sponsor, we will get you into the Facebook and into the email system and directly in front of 15,000 people every week, and what's more, we can even be, if you've got to be a little bit clever about it, but we will even make sure that we're only getting you to talk to the people who are interested in your sort of product. All of a sudden, you've got a massively valuable asset.
Yep.
Now, you're starting to see that more at the professional area of sport, but less so at the community grassroots area. But it's a community grassroots area that really, if they exploited it, probably have the greatest asset value.
So if we looked at this, and I'll use full names now because that way better understand. Because if I say Phil, it's just you're both in there.
Yep.
So Phil Brooker, from your point of view, you're identifying where the structure of organisations has to be changed. And Phil Shelley, from CTI's point of view, you're helping to train the people who are going to come in and be part of that structure.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's and part of any responsible training program is to maintain good, strong industry networks and making sure that the training is relevant to the needs of industry as well. And that's, you know, that's how the relationship with Phil Brooker came about as well.
So in terms of when you talk about governance, and footy clubs traditionally were run, you know, there wasn't a lot of accountability.
No.
Wasn't a lot of bookwork going on, a lot of accountability in that area. Is that an area that that you look at, Phil Brooker? And when Phil Brooker's finished, Phil Shelley, if you can give us your two bobs worth on it.
Well, yeah, sure. We do. Now, we're actually being approached more and more often by... particularly associations who have now gone from, or sorry, are going through the process, generally on good advice, but it's only half the advice they need, that they've been told, given your size and given your structure and given your growth plans, you really need to move from a committee structure to being a board.
Yep.
Now, there's some good reasons why you would move from being a committee to a board, but on top of that too, though, there's a whole lot of extra responsibilities. And while, again, you'll generally have the people putting their hand up who are, again, take a netball or a basketball or a football association, you're going to have the hands of parents going up. And a lot of them actually have really good skill sets in terms of their work life,
yep,
which is great, and they're the type of people that you want to get onto boards. But being a board member and being a business person are not necessarily the same thing. So... the challenge for a lot of them is if you can get a good broad skill set into the room in terms of a board, that's a great start.
Yep.
But then knowing who needs to do what, and just as importantly, who needs to not do what, it's really important. One of the things we see often is that where you've got a new committee or board structure put in place, the board has to understand that the board role is not to actually do the management, the day-to-day operational work.
Yep.
And trying to put the dividers up and separate those responsibilities is a real challenge for some boards, because a lot of the people on the boards are really embedded in every aspect of the association, from coaching to playing. There'll be parents, and they might even work behind the canteen at times, and they're all important things. And it doesn't mean that you can't do them all, but you've got to understand when you're wearing what hat.
Yep.
And as soon as and you see this in business outside of sport too, is that when people don't understand which hat they've got on, it can cause enormous problems through an organisation.
Phil?
Yeah, just on that topic in particular, example of how we're trying to address these issues within the course, and we've got our curriculum and our textbook, long proven principles and things. But you know, on top of that, we had Malcolm Speed come in last Monday and talk about this topic in particular, about managing operational plans and corporate structures, and understanding the role of the board, that they set the tone and the spirit of the organisation. They appoint the CEO and monitor the performance of the CEO and these sorts of things, knowing where the boundaries of those roles lie. But the good thing was he was able to, share experiences and from different, committees and boards and associations he's been involved with, everything from World Cricket to, Golf Australia to Richmond Football Club to Cycling Australia, and, share personal views on what works well in this type of environment, what doesn't work so well here. Things you just don't get out of a textbook. This is, years and years of knowledge that is being, given to our students every fortnight.
And then the ability for them to stick their hand up and say, Malcolm, can I ask you about so-and-so, which is an enormous benefit, I would have thought.
Well, that's true, and it's such an intimate environment, having these these icons of the sports industry coming in, yet it's such an intimate sort of a teaching environment where they have that freedom to ask questions like that at any given time and go off on a tangent. It's all relevant to what we're working on anyway, but we just think that's a real string in our bow, that it's much better to learn it that way than just from a textbook.
Phil Brooker, what's the first thing you would tell a club when they're looking at a club or an organisation or a league, when they're looking at their initial thing? What's the one thing you tell them that they need to do first?
The first thing they need to do, and this might sound a little bit strange, but the first thing they need to do is they actually need to understand what it is that they do. There's a lot of moving parts in your typical sporting club or association, a lot of moving parts. If they run a venue, they are a venue. I mean, it's a business often in and of itself. They're running competitions. They've got their teams that run. So you've got to actually understand what it is that you do, and what are the most important things within that you do. Mm. Having done that, I think the management structure is probably the next thing that you need to address, and try and work out what are the actual roles that you need within the organisation. What are the roles that would be nice to have? So things that you can work towards, but we don't necessarily need them now. And that's where you can potentially have the well-meaning volunteers remaining in the business. And it's probably then and only then that you've got your management structure going that I would then advise people to get their board structure right. Because a committee can, generally speaking, oversee it to a point. It's when it becomes a full-blown business operation, and as I was saying, in a lot of cases, multiple business operations, that you then need to get your board structure in place, and you need to make sure that I should say that the whole way along, you've got to make sure that your governance is uh, is up to scratch, because otherwise you're creating problems for yourself as well.
Yep. Phil, thank you very much for coming in. Phil Brooker from Bella Jack Consulting and the Victorian Government Department of Economic Development. And Phil Shelley, will hopefully you'll have moved house and we'll have you in the studio next week.
Yes, I hope so too, Kevin. I'm sure we'll be right by then. Thanks very much for letting me phone in today.
You'll either have moved house or you'll have been kicked out of house, one of the two.
Yeah, if I didn't do it this week, I would have been kicked out for sure.
Good on you. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Kevin.
Program manager there and senior educator of the sports programs at CTI. Now, if you want more information, you can phone them on 1300 701 639 or email info@communitytraininginitiatives.com.au. And Phil Brooker, how do people get in touch with you if they want to talk to you about some of the things you've spoken about today?
Well, they could always phone Bella Jack Consulting on 0400 906 864, or shoot us an email to contact@bellajack.com.
Beautiful. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
It is 26 to 3. Got to get to our